ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for August 21st, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins as always, and I thought it was the fourth, but it might be the fifth annual college soccer preview with Travis Clark of Top Drawer Soccer. Travis, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's happy to be here once again.
I think, Travis, when I started to talk to you about college soccer, I had a full head of hair. I was youthful and full of spirit and optimism. But, you know, things have changed. on that note, Travis, let's just start with a place setting of the overall NCAA season this year. I noticed something jumped out when I was looking at the preseason rankings. And it's a high Eastern, I'm biased, but high Eastern heavy ranking top 10. I think there was something like 18 of the top 20 were Eastern schools ranked on the men's side. It was a little bit better on the women's side in terms of an East-West split, but it was about a 15-5 split on the women's side. Why is so much talent in the East right now?
Well, for the men's side, it's pretty easy. There's just a lack of Division One men's programs to an extent. That's kind of the easy answer. Obviously, Stanford's been doing really well on the men's and women's side, but UCLA is in a really interesting spot. Their head coach was resigned, fired, whatever you want to call it, from in sort of the wake of the academic scandal, which kind of reverberated throughout the United States, where they were basically coaches accepting money to create fake players to help get kids into school. If your listeners are hearing me say this and have no idea, I would just Google it, and I'm not going to go any further. So they're going to be pretty down this year. They lost a lot of their talent. And then I think there's always been a little bit of a gravitation towards East Coast programs because players are closer together. There's it's an easier to scout in some ways, whereas there's a little bit more distance. And that's kind of it's a 19th century explanation for it, but I feel like that is a little bit of the case. And then, I think part of it is also that the ACC is a strong conference, so you're going to see the biggest programs there. There's going to be a little bit of an ACC bias too, I feel like, whether it's men's or women's soccer. But for the most part, historically, it's proven to be true, despite the fact that Stanford has done really well on the men's side of things, winning three of the past four, obviously, last fall notwithstanding. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out this year and to see how, if anything, shifts in the landscape, if you will. But I feel like, at least on the women's side, you should see a push from UCLA women, obviously headlined by Jessie Fleming in her final season of college soccer. That's going to be interesting to see how it goes out this season.
Travis, we always talk when it comes to our draft time, the other time of year that we always speak, traditionally over the years, about the place of college soccer in the North American pyramid system, however you want to put it. There has been some movement over the past couple of years to try and change some of the things about college soccer that kind of makes it unique, to put it more in line with how it's played around the world. Is there any progress on that? Can you see a future which has the college game looking more like the international game?
I'm not 100% sure. The last I heard on it is that the Big Ten, which is a conference that has Maryland, which, Sasha Sarofsky is one of the many head coaches, but he's kind of been leading the charge a little bit, recognizing the need to change. I think it's going to be put to some sort of vote in front of the NCAA in 2020. That being said, I'm not 100% sure on what that vote would mean, if it would be just like advancing it from some kind of committee into another. I'm very, very doubtful that it would come to pass, even though, they're framing it not necessarily from a professional development perspective, but more just like a student-athlete well-being perspective, where, soccer is a game that they're playing two games in the span of 3 days. It's a little bit of a different beast than other sports, so this way they're trying to frame it from a perspective of, you know, giving the student athlete more time, even though I feel like it's a push more towards, hey, let's get it into a pathway for more professional development. I just don't necessarily think that would be the case, because even if they pass those rules and make those changes and from a game playing perspective, there's still NCAA rules that limit how many times a player is allowed to touch the ball, how many practices they're allowed to do. There are all kinds of issues with facilities sharing at different programs that'll make this a difficult thing to pass. So I'm very skeptical the NCAA would ever do it. But again, you know, maybe they'll prove me wrong. We'll see.
Now, looking at the 2019-2020 college season, both men's and women's, Travis, if you can put yourself into the future and maybe give me four on each side of the teams that we should keep a very close eye on throughout the season.
Yeah, so I already mentioned some of the names. Let's start on the women's side because they kick off this weekend. You know, obviously you have the defending champions, Florida State. They should be a force to be reckoned with once again, where they've returned a lot of their players. They lost a little bit of their depth. They graduated a few players, but they bring back plenty of talent. You know, Yuji Zhao and Jalen Howell are sophomores. They're both midfielders for their respective national team, youth national teams. Zhao being a Chinese youth national team player, and Howell being a Canadian. They do have a Canadian on the team, Gabby Carl, who's back as well. So there's a lot of pieces in place. Stanford women's program, they lost their defenders, Alana Cook and Tierna Davidson, so have some rebuilding, retooling at the back. But Katarina Macario is arguably the best player in college soccer. She's somebody to keep an eye on as well. Then, of course, I mentioned UCLA, which should be primed for a push on the women's side. Of course, just to be specific, you know, I talked about their men's program being down. And then I'm curious to see what North Carolina can put together. They have a lot, they've been bringing in blue chip recruits, but the game has obviously, I don't want to say passed them by too strong, but a minimum caught up to them. They made it to the national championship last fall, bring a lot back, but also lost a lot, as college programs are wont to do. And, you know, there's a good bit of overlap on the men's side as well. You can look at Stanford men's program, winners of three of the last four. Obviously, Maryland pipped them to it last fall. But the Cardinals should be back. They brought in two of the better attacking players that actually are going to college. This kid, Useni Buda, from prep school. He's from Africa, but played prep soccer in the Northeast. Sort of like a name that Canadian... He didn't play at the same school as Jacob Schaffelberg, if a name that Toronto fans would at least be somewhat familiar with. He's somebody to watch. I think he can fire right away as a freshman, maybe get in the conversation for MLS Generation Adidas stuff if they can convince a kid from Africa to leave a Stanford education behind, which I would be skeptical if that happens. I think North Carolina could also be, you know, pretty good on the men's side as well. There's going to be issues for them in scoring goals, but their head coach Carlos Samuano always has a pretty organized team. He builds around them pretty well, and I think if they can find goals, they should be a handful. Mauricio Pineda is one of their big pieces in the midfield. He's a Chicago Fire Academy player that probably has little desire to play for the Chicago Fire. Who knows what is going on there, but I think I'll leave it at that. Wake Forest, once again, should be in the mix. They, you know, they play some of the prettiest soccer in the country. They also have lots and lots of talent coming back. Obviously, some holes to fill. Brad Dunwell in midfield. They had Sam Rabin at the back who off. But I think with the pieces they have back, with the improvement of some of the younger players, the guys that didn't leave, I don't think they were necessarily ravaged by any homegrown signings or early departures. But they actually have a Canadian that, Dwayne, I think you mentioned on Twitter. He played at League One Ontario, Alistair Johnston, who was kind of a in and out of the starting lineup, can play midfield, can play outside back. But, you know, a name for Canadian fans to watch if they want to watch some actual decent soccer at the collegiate level. And then I'll stick with Akron. I think that, you know, we saw them make it to the national championship last fall on the men's side, and they lost a couple of players. Marcel Zajac left early, but they bring back enough and have added some interesting talent from both North American and international shores to, I think, provided they stay, you know, their key pieces stay healthy, then they should be there, thereabouts once again, as long as their season kind of goes to plan.
Zajac, who came to the Canadian Premier League, if yes, our listeners are wondering, which will be a question for you later in the show, Travis, because it is interesting the amount of future NCAA players that will end up in the Canadian Premier League, both men and the future women's one. But I'm wondering one thing. You mentioned the ACC earlier in the show, and I read a lot about the Big Ten, too. Like, three teams from the Big Ten made it to the College Cup in 2018, and you're seeing some big programs with big, I would say, a lot of investment, to not say infrastructure, to not say more easy way to attract big recruits. But when we look at the ACC as the Big Ten, who would you consider as, not necessarily the best conference, but where are the best teams coming out of, meaning that in conference play, they're going to be tested and become mm-hmm. the best team going into the College Cup in 6 months' time?
Yeah, I'm very curious about how the Big Ten will repeat it, because as you noted, they made a strong push. Indiana was this really kind of perennial program that rolled through everyone, obviously coming up short in the national semifinal to Big Ten rivals Maryland. Both those teams lose a ton. Like, I think Indiana only has one starter back from the team that lost to Maryland in the semifinal. We're seeing a couple of those players pop up in MLS. Reese Buckmaster just signed with the New York Red Bulls as an example, and Justin Rendick signed a homegrown deal with the Revolution. Griffin Dorsey, I believe, is at Toronto FC, even if he's probably just playing in USL League One at the moment. They're all in the Hoosiers. And then Maryland also has lost a similar amount of talent. Chase Gasper playing at Minnesota United. Dane St. Clair is the backup goalkeeper, or maybe the third string at Minnesota United. So I think how the conference reloads will be telling in terms of the level. I think there's more returning talent and more quality teams in the ACC. This is speaking on the men's side, and flipping that over a little bit to the women's side, we'll see a little bit more from the Pac-12. The SEC, while not often thought of as a soccer power, has done pretty well in recent memory in terms of sending programs into the NCAA tournament. So obviously the women's side's a bit different with the 64 team field versus the 48 on the men's side, but I don't think there's going to be too many shocks or surprises. And you know, a lot of these coaches know that if they're not in one of those conferences, they need to really beef up the schedule in order to get into the tournament if they're not the automatic winners in the conference tournament. So, it's a puzzle piece, and you got to put together in the span of about a month and a half to really be competitive. So that can lead to some surprises. But that being said, I don't think there's a program that really jumps out to me that's going to put together something kind of crazy like we saw Kentucky, for an example, last fall on the men's side, where I didn't really see it coming, but I think they have a lot of players back that could be more than just a kind of a one-off successful year.
Travis, in this streaming era that we live in, there's something that a concept that people call a league pass team. A team that you will watch above all else is when it's out there. If there was an NCAA league pass team that you would seek out and watch for entertainment value as much as skill value on both the men's and women's sides this year, what would they be? What would the most entertaining teams on both sides of the draw be?
So there won't be any new programs to throw out for that, but for the men's side, Wake Forest, they like to play possession, up-tempo, attacking soccer, and then Akron, which we've seen in the past, play some entertaining soccer. I think they could be even better this season in terms of creating chances, scoring goals, and that sort of thing. And then, again, no repeats for me on the women's side. I can throw in one other name, but UCLA play some of the prettiest soccer, as does Stanford. Then the University of Virginia women's team as well. So those are kind of five programs. I'm not sure how available they would be north of us, but with you guys in Canada. But if you are, I think ESPN carries a lot of that stuff, So depending on how those rights kind of transfer over, it could be possibilities. Obviously, the Pac-12 programs I mentioned would be on the Pac-12 network, and I would know even less about how that works in Canada, but I'd be curious to know if those kind of games would be available simply to see Jesse Fleming's last hurrah in college soccer.
There is a few channels available in Canada. There's like, I remember watching the Big Ten Network, and I remember watching as well CBS Sports All Access and other platforms like this. Well, depending on which conferences, sometime it is watchable, or you can always use, usually it's not geo-blocked, so you can probably watch and stream online for those college games.
Yeah, the Pac-12 Network's available on some of our cable programs as well.
Cheap for them, right?
You're surprised at the amount of American programming you can get up here, Travis, but nonetheless, let's get into a time machine and go ahead to January, the next time we talk on the men's side only, obviously, because, well, no, I guess we can talk about the individual itself as well. What kind of players will we be most looking at and most anticipating talking about when draft time rolls around? I'm assuming Fleming will draw some attention to the interview itself. So you go and you tell me who I'll be talking about in 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, it's always difficult to know because the names that are worth talking about are some of the younger players. So, you know, I mentioned Usani Buddha, obviously the kid at Stanford. And especially men's soccer, at this point, most of the elite players are not going to college. You'd have to kind of be foolhardy to think that. And then if they are, a lot of them are obviously homegrown players. So there's a few names out there, though, I think, that aren't affiliated with MLS academies that could enter conversations. So, you know, you're looking at a defender, Jack Mayer from Indiana. He'll be a sophomore. There's another center back at Akron, Carlo Rotaccio, who will be also going to be a sophomore. I have a soft spot for midfielder Joe Bell that played at the Under-20 World Cup. He got a contract offer from a club in Norway, but elected to return. I think that he'd be a pretty decent number six type, but again, not sure if you're burning an international spot on him. And, you know, maybe Mauricio Pineda is offered a route into the draft in some way. You know, he'll be a senior at North Carolina in the fall. Jack Callahan's a relatively decent forward from Michigan, again, but he's an English player, so probably going to count against your international spot, unlikely for teams to use it. So those are a couple of names. Josh Penn's a forward at Indiana. Stefan Stojanovic and Patrick Schulte will be playing their freshman seasons at St. Louis, and both played at a U.S. club called Soccer's FC in the Chicago area. Obviously not in the Fire Academy, but two of the better recruits that are hitting college soccer this fall. So those are some of the names out there. You know, on the women's side, you know, it's a little bit more straightforward. Kaylee Riel at Penn State, she'll be a senior center back. I think she could be one of the top picks in an NWSL draft. Then, of course, it'd be really interesting to see what exactly Jesse Fleming decides to do. I would imagine, given the exposure she's had and her experience, that she'll look to sign somewhere overseas. And you add in the complication for Canadian players, and it's almost a no-brainer at that point. Dana Castellanos is a Venezuelan forward from Florida State who she can flatter to deceive at times, but I think if you're the NWSL, you want to make a strong push for attacking talent. However, I think she'll follow Fleming and go abroad. You know, domestic players probably sticking to like an Ali Watt at Texas A&M. She's somebody, Ella Stevens is a cerebral midfielder at Duke, but I think her talents could be best suited going abroad. So, you know, in some ways it's trickier in the NWSL because then you add in the fact that some of the players, even the best players that you think could be pros, just decide to say, hey, I'm done playing soccer and I'm not going to pursue this professionally. And the money just isn't there. So I'm going to go make six figures out of, you know, a Duke. So those are just some of the names to keep an eye on, and it'd be interesting to see what plays out on both sides.
Travis, we do appreciate your time and especially your knowledge as well. It's a vast well of knowledge that I love to go take a drink in. But in closing, the big variable that changed since last year's preview is, well, now we have a league in Canada, and we have seen players coming from the NCAA coming to play in Canada. Same for U Sports, which is the Canadian NCAA equivalent, have taking part of the first year of the Canadian Premier League. How does it change, if it does change anything, the Canadian Premier League for college players coming out of their college career? Or like Marcel Zajac, you mentioned earlier, quitting the college career because of the professional opportunity that they have been given. Does it change a bit the, I would say, the landscape of professional employment for players finishing or in their second, third year of university having the bright lights or more, not necessarily that bright, but the lights of the professional career attracting them?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's like any line of work where the more jobs you have, the better, the more opportunities there are for younger players or people looking to break into a certain field. The more quote-unquote entry-level jobs you have, the better. And obviously that's something that the Canadian Premier League offers to not just men, but when is the Women's League launching? I haven't really followed that news, but
it's a
is that something
years.
That's supposed to follow?
It's a few years away, but it is under progress.
I honestly think that would be, in many ways, a bigger boon, depending on how it works out financially for some of the women's players, because you know you see every season there are Canadian players in the NCAA ranks here on the women's side that are certainly professionally talented, you know, well, good enough to play professional soccer somewhere should they desire it. And a lot of the times the NWSL isn't an option because of the sort of roster constraints that teams must face with the international players counting. Sorry, Canadian players counting as international. So I think that's a big development. Then the other thing for me, where I sit, I haven't, again, tracked the first year of the Canadian Premier League. I just have only so many hours in the day to follow. But I think one thing that you might see more and more is some of the players that, played for Unionville Milliken soccer clubs, the Vaughan SCs, the Sigmas. I feel like you might see some of those players maybe still come to the NCAA, but after a year or two, if they can build up enough recognition and scouting, they'll then sign for one of the teams in the Canadian Premier League as kind of their next step in the process, as opposed to, playing the 4 years, and at the men's NCAA school. I think, maybe like a Callum Montgomery wouldn't have lasted, as an example of a name that, he hasn't played much at FC Dallas this year, but he's a kid from Victoria, Vancouver Island, and went to play 4 years at the University of Charlotte, and now he's playing for an MLS team, but maybe in a 3 to 4 years time, someone like that doesn't end up spending the entire 4 years because they'll play well enough that a Canadian Premier League team will make a big enough offer. And I think a lot of it too will depend on how the league does and how the Canadian Premier League works with MLS. And is there going to be any kind of player movement? Can it be not necessarily a feeder for the league, but a stepping stone for some of the better players? So, maybe you see an 18, 19-year-old, even American, try to go that route, again, depending on how roster restrictions work or what have you. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's definitely a good thing for the players because it's more jobs and hopefully more opportunities down the road.
Travis Clark of Top Draw Soccer, thank you very much for your time today, Travis. We do wish you a great first weekend of the women's college season and a great season overall in the NCAA soccer world.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
And we'll be right back after this short break to close today's show.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
If you're looking for more information on the NCAA college soccer season and college soccer and development of soccer players in general, I suggest you visit Travis's work, topdrawersoccer.com. to get all the info that you are looking for. Dwayne, to finish the show today, you know, last night there was a two Leagues Cup game, the semifinals, and we had Tigres, Club America, and we had Cruz Azul and the Galaxy. I'm not going to lie, I didn't really pay attention to the Cruz Azul one, but it happened to be on my television for Club America versus Tigres, and it finished in penalties and 2-2 because of a non-goal of a Club America player late in injury time, extra time, of the second half. But the interesting part to me was the penalty aspect, which turned out to be not important, that penalty, but it's 3-2. Tigres is having the advantage, Dwayne, and you have a Club America player stepping into the spot, Jimenez, I believe, and you have the goalkeeper of Tigres in the goal. And the goalkeeper of Tigres, Dwayne, is like fired up, he's full of passion, and everyone knows each other, right? In the Liga MX, they are friends or colleagues or contemporaries, and some of them have gamesmanship, and some of them are like very vocal. So they looked at each other, and the player's like, I'm going to hit it there. I'm going to hit it to your right. The goalie looks at him, he's like, make it hard. Make it hard. I can take it. The player's like, okay. And he hit the hardest penalty I've ever seen. The keeper puts a hand on it, but still ends up in the back of the net. The keeper's mad. Oh, I didn't do my shot. Then he turns around and walks toward the player, gives like a handshake and like, yeah, that was fun. That was a good moment. I kind of enjoyed seeing that. Yeah, it's the League's Cup. Nobody cares. It's a rivalry, I guess, Club America versus Tigres. But that moment, that exchange between the penalty taker and the goalkeeper, that's what sports is all about.
Yeah, it's also not happening outside of something like the League's Cup, right? I mean,
that's true.
Competition, but it's so... Yeah, they're trying to win. They're trying to have fun. They're professionals. They're competitive. But at the ultimate, at the end of the day, they're looking at a penalty shootout in a game that they probably consider a friendly as much as anything else, and they're going to have some fun with it. So, yes, you can appreciate it on a sporting level that way. A competitive level, different debate. And that's why we didn't preview the Leafs Cup semifinal yesterday.
But it was worthwhile. And I guess fans in Houston like to go see Tigres in Club America way more than they like to go see the Houston Dynamo, because it was jam-packed for the game yesterday, which is not the case usually for a Dynamo game, but I guess that's a discussion for another day. If you like what Dwayne and I do on a daily basis, I suggest you help us retweet the show, share the show, help us spread the good news. You can always so help us by subscribing to our podcast, subscribing to our YouTube page, Facebook page, and make sure you follow us on Twitter at SoccerTodaySPN, at Kev Laramie for myself, and at 24th Minute for Dwayne. And also, make sure you go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Today, a little later today, on our Patreon exclusive feed, we will have an interview with Carmine Sacco, master soccer coach of York University for the York Lions, also assistant coach for York 9. So we'll be talking about U Sports, talk about York University later on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast with Carmine Sacco. And until then, until tomorrow for another edition of the World of Football with a Soccer Perspective, I'm Kevin Laramie, and for Dwayne Rollins, we do wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.